From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Across Maryland, Republicans are trying to capitalize on Governor Hogan's popularity, especially in Baltimore County, where Republican Al Redner faces Democrat Johnny Olszewski for county executive. WIPR's John Lee says the vote could be an upset.
Baltimore County, for whatever it's worth, does have a 2-to-1 Democrat to Republican registration, so you would think those numbers would support Olszewski. However, we'll find out. Hogan won the county big 4 years ago.
Then WIPR City reporter Dominique Maria Benessi fills us in on the dispute over aerial surveillance by police. In 2016, news broke that a plane had secretly flown surveillance above Baltimore City. That raised privacy concerns, but some supporters argue it could help police close homicide cases. Will the city resume it? On the record, after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Democrats outnumber Republicans in Maryland 2-to-1, but the imbalance does not seem to be undercutting the incumbent Republican governor's popularity. A University of Baltimore and Baltimore Sun poll found 3 out of 5 Democratic voters approve of the job Larry Hogan is doing. The question is coattails. Will the governor's popularity trickle down ballot to races like those in Baltimore County? There, Republicans are working hard to win county council and state senate seats, as well as the county executive job, for which state insurance commissioner and Republican Al Redner faces off against Democratic former state delegate Johnny Olszewski. Joining me is John Lee, who covers the county for WIPR. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
John, lay out the scene for us. What kind of support do the county executive candidates have across the county?
Well, it's a good question. The honest answer is we'll find out on election day. But what they hope is happening is that Governor Hogan, as you said, very popular in the state and by all indications, extremely popular in Baltimore County. So Al Redner is holding on really tight to the Hogan coattails. He brings up the governor every chance he gets. They've campaigned together. Hogan has done fundraisers for Redner. So Al Redner is counting on that being the key to him winning. On the Democratic side, you have Johnny Olszewski, who you'll remember won an amazing, stunning, very close primary battle. He has some name recognition in the county. I'm not sure Redner did until this campaign. Olszewski's father was well known in politics for many, many years. Olszewski was a delegate, as you mentioned. And Baltimore County, for whatever it's worth, does have a 2-to-1 Democrat to Republican registration. So you would think those numbers would support Olszewski. However, we'll find out. Hogan won the county big 4 years ago.
School crowding and conditions of schools are a huge issue. Mm-hmm. Both candidates talked about it with Tom Hall on WIPR's Midday last month. First, we'll hear Redner, then Olszewski.
Working with the Governor Hogan in his second term, I am confident that we can leverage additional state dollars for these projects.
There's a pretty broad approach that I would take as county executive, and that starts first and foremost with doing a full audit of efficiencies, waste, fraud, abuse in Baltimore County.
How expensive will it be to meet the growing school needs in Baltimore County?
You know, I've asked that question, and nobody can really put a dollar figure on it, but it's pretty high. We're talking, well, Johnny Olszewski may come closest where he says he wants to get up to $2 billion for infrastructure. And they're both saying a similar thing, which is that they're both saying they're going to be counting on the state for a lot of help. Redner says his buddy, the governor, Governor Hogan, assuming he gets reelected, would be someone who would help him get dollars for the county. Olszewski says it's his connections in the legislature, where he served as a delegate, where he's hoping to get a similar agreement with the state that the city has with the state, that perhaps the county could get, say, $1 billion in funding for school construction. So they're both hoping for a lot of help from the state. But it's important to remember, there's no guarantees there. Neither one of them can guarantee that that will happen. So the question comes, then what do you do? And to be honest, neither one of them is very specific about that.
Does the word taxes come up when they discuss it?
taxes come up, and here's what they say. Al Redmer says, he doesn't say, read my lips, no new taxes, but that's what he means. He says he will not raise taxes, no way, no how. Olszewski always says, as a very last resort, that he will try to do other things. And then here's another area where they're similar. They both say, we're going to try to find waste, we're going to look, go through the budget and try to find places where we can cut to find money. But if you talk to the people who are in charge or are keeping a close eye on the county budget, they say there's not that much fat there. They're not going to find that much there. So that's not really going to be the solution. Just off the top, you can talk about the three high schools that people talk about a lot in the county that need, many think, need replacing. That's Towson, Delaney, and Lansdowne High Schools. You put those three together, you could be talking $450 million, give or take. That's a lot of money. And so no one can really say, this is how we're going to pay for it yet.
Do these two candidates agree that those are the schools that need attention?
Yes, that is one thing they do agree on. They both say that those three schools should be replaced.
Let's talk about affordable housing. In 2016, the county reached a settlement with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to end discrimination against tenants who use housing vouchers. We'll hear Redmer on that and then Olszewski.
So the consent decree I am opposed to. And I believe that we should go back to federal court and try to unwind it.
I am committed to enforcing what we've already committed to, unlike my opponent who wants to file suit against the federal government and waste potentially millions of dollars of taxpayer money on a court case that we will lose.
Tell us about this suit.
Well, this is a very clear example of where they are very different. Yes, the suit that goes back to 2016, it was over a housing discrimination complaint. And it does a couple of things. One thing it does is that it requires the county executive to submit legislation to council. And that legislation would require landlords to accept any legal sources of income. That includes housing vouchers. And so Al Redmer says he opposes that. And if he becomes county executive, he told me he will not do that. He will not submit that legislation to council. Now, if he does that, that's a violation of the agreement. The county could end up in U.S. District Court. Redmer is very much opposed to it. He wants it to go to court anyway. Olszewski is the polar opposite. He's all in on this. He thinks that there's been a problem in the county. Well, they both think there's been a problem, but Olszewski believes this is a solution. Another part of it is that it requires the county to spread affordable housing around the county. Right now, affordable housing is basically concentrated on the east side, think Dundalk, and on the west side, kind of the Woodlawn area. And so the idea is to spread it around. And again, Redmer is opposed to that. Olszewski supports it.
Does the settlement require Baltimore County to add public housing?
No, it does not. There is no public housing in Baltimore County. What we're talking about here is affordable housing. And what that means is that it's going to be based on an individual family's median income, whether they can live there. So that's what it's about. And we're talking about 1,000 new affordable homes across the county over the next 10 or 12 years. And you often hear people talk about Section 8 housing. That's not what we're really talking about here. I think Section 8 is sometimes a bit of a code for public housing. What we're talking about here is people who can use housing vouchers to help them afford affordable housing. Also important to know, Sheila, is that you can live in an affordable home and not have vouchers.
Universal pre-K and free community college, two issues that seem to exemplify the differences between Olszewski and Redmer. Tell us about them.
Yeah, they really do. Olszewski's for them, all in for them. And Redmer will tell you, hey, I have no problem with them. But what I think we have to do in Baltimore County, according to Al Redmer, is come up with a plan, a long-term, multi-year budget plan. Find ways we can pay for things that the county is supposed to be doing. And then after that, we can start looking for other things to pay for. Redmer makes a lot, he talks a lot about being a businessman, many years as a businessman, and he is the state insurance commissioner. One forum I went to last week, Redmer called Olszewski an idealist. He says, hey, I get it. Johnny Olszewski is an idealist. Redmer left soon after that, and when Olszewski got a chance to talk, he said, yeah, I'm an idealist. I am an idealist. I think we need an idealist in Baltimore County. We need to go long. We need to shoot high. And so he embraced that. In my mind, that really crystallizes these two guys. You have the Republican, Al Redmer. He is a traditional Republican, very businesslike, balance the budgets, do the basic work of government that we have to do. And you have Johnny Olszewski, who is saying, We need to do all kinds of things. We need to spend $2 billion on school infrastructure. We need to have pre-K. We need to have free community college, and we will find a way to pay for it. And so that's really a key, in my mind, the key difference between these two candidates.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with WIPR reporter John Lee, who's covering local races in Baltimore County, including the county executive race. Governor Hogan's popularity is not only a boon for Al Redmer, it's prompting a serious effort to win 5 Senate seats across the state now held by Democrats, which would break the Democrats' veto-proof majority in the Senate. Some of those seats the Republicans are trying to flip are in Baltimore County, right?
That's right. There are 2 and maybe even 3 that the Republicans believe they can win. I think probably their most likely pickup may be the 42nd, which if you picture Baltimore County in your mind, the 42nd is a bit of a wedge right in the middle of the county from Towson right on up to the Pennsylvania line. It's been held for 16 years by Democrat State Senator Jim Brochin, who is retiring after an unsuccessful run for county executive. So that opens up that seat. It's an open seat. That is considered a conservative district. And so you have Delegate Chris West, a Republican, fairly well known, who is running against Democrat Robbie Leonard, who's putting on a strong campaign. But I think the sense of it is it's going to be it's West's to lose, that he should probably have a good shot of picking that up. So that's a decent shot for the Republicans to pick up. The other one is right next door to the 42nd, the 8th Senate. State Senator Kathy Klausmeier, who has been in the Senate for many years, is getting a strong challenge from a sitting delegate, Chris Mealy. And so Republicans are very optimistic that they may have a shot of knocking off Klausmeier. And then the third one is over in more of the Catonsville area, Arbutus, think over there, where Delegate Clarence Lamb, who is a Democrat, is running for the state Senate seat that is being vacated by Senator Ed Casemeyer, who's retiring. But he is also getting a strong challenge from a Republican, Joe Ho, a businessman.
On the county council, every seat is up for re-election. Mm-hmm. All but one is contested. Mm-hmm. It's in the 6th district race in the southeastern part of the county that Republicans are hoping to gain a seat. Why do they believe that seat is vulnerable?
Well, that seat is the 6th district. It runs from the city line up towards Middle River and beyond. So it goes from being kind of maybe purplish blue to conservative. And so the Democrat, Kathy Bevins, who currently holds that seat, she told me, she said, this is a purple district. And she also told me a year plus ago that she knew the Republicans were going after her. And so because the east side of the county is becoming much more conservative, part of that district is in the east side of the county, the Republicans think they have a really good shot of knocking off Kathy Bevins. And if they do, and every other district council district seat holds serve, then the Republicans would gain control of the county council.
This is the first election in which some seats on the Baltimore County School Board are up for election. Mm-hmm. What factors will voters be considering when it comes to school board candidates?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, they don't run on party, so you can't vote for the Republican or the Democrat. So I think a fair amount of it's going to be name recognition, you know, who's putting out the best campaign. There are several candidates running for the school board who are really out there and being very aggressive, have some money, getting their names out. There are a couple of board members who are incumbents, actually. One of them is actually running unopposed now, Julie Hinn. And she's running unopposed because a name you may remember, Pete Bielenson, was going to run against her, but he has since left the state, so she has a free ride back to the board. There's another incumbent board member who's also running. You would think they may have an advantage because her name is well known. But, you know, it's a bit of, we'll have to see. This is the first time around. It's 7 seats, 1 for each council district, and then there's also going to be 4 appointed school board seats. So we'll have to see how all that shakes out.
John, thank you.
Hey, thank you.
WIPR reporter John Lee covers Baltimore County. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we'll link to his recent reporting about campaigns in Baltimore County. Tune in at noon today to hear Baltimore County Executive candidates Al Redmer and Johnny Olszewski debate their views on Midday with Tom Hall. Quick break here. When we come back, should Baltimore City resume aerial surveillance? WIPR's Dominique Bonessi fills us in on the debate. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. 2 years ago, Bloomberg Businessweek broke news of a secret aerial surveillance over Baltimore, able to track individual people and cars. For two 90-day sessions, a small Cessna airplane mounted with wide-angle cameras had observed an area of 30 square miles and transmitted real-time images to analysts on the ground. The program is back in the headlines now, following a meeting of the Public Safety Committee of the Baltimore City Council. Joining me to talk about the program, previously known as Persistent Surveillance Systems, now called the Community Support Program, is WYPR City Reporter Dominique Maria Benessi. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sheila.
What was the reason for this meeting by the Public Safety Committee?
So the president of the City Council was asked to have this meeting. Now, it's unclear if the mayor asked the president of City Council or if the police department asked the president of City Council to hold this meeting to basically allow the public and allow for the City Council an informational hearing to hear about what this program would do for the city and what the results were from the last time it was in Baltimore.
Is it up to the City Council to decide if this program returns?
Absolutely not. As Brandon Scott said at the beginning of—
Brandon Scott is the chair of the Public Safety Committee on the City Council.
At the beginning of the meeting, he said, no, we don't actually have any control over the police department. The last time this is implemented, you have to remember, it was the police department that knew about it. The mayor, it's said that the mayor didn't know about it, nor did the state's attorney till the article came out in Bloomberg in August.
Let's hear what the program's founder, Ross McNutt, said at the Public Safety Committee meeting about his program's effectiveness.
We witnessed 5 murders, 18 shootings, 2 officer-involved shootings, rapes, aggravated assaults, armed robberies. And we provided a lot of information to investigators on how to solve those crimes.
Dominique, did that pan out? Were the police able to use this information from this program to solve crimes?
So what we saw was there were 102 incidents, and that's incidents that are cases that were brought up because of this technology. Only 2 of them went through a prosecutorial process, and only 1 of them actually came out on top as actually came through with results, and the other one was dropped.
The case was dropped.
Yes, so 2 cases.
So there's only 1 in which this kind of evidence from such a program was presented to a Baltimore court.
Right. And we really don't have complete data about how successful this program was in stopping homicides or resolving homicides, especially that, because we know that there are hundreds of homicides every year in Baltimore City.
Well, is the police department advocating to bring this program back to Baltimore?
That is something I've also asked Interim Commissioner Gary Tuggle. I sent an email out to them. I have not heard back from them yet. They're saying that as of right now, we know that McNutt has met with the police department in trying to get this program out again. He's also met with various city community associations and city groups of community groups trying to ramp up support for this program again.
Yeah, tell me about that. Where is McNutt finding support in the city for this program?
There's a group called Community with Solutions, and they are a small group of people advocating that, you know, we've had so many murders in the past 3 years in Baltimore City, and we would like to see some resolution to them. And this is ultimately their goal, is to get this plane in the air.
So they were outspoken at the community meeting?
Yes, and they've held several meetings in which McNutt has come and presented the surveillance plane and what the technology is to citizen groups.
That's WYPR reporter Dominique Maria Benessi here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the potential return of a controversial aerial surveillance program that was tested in Baltimore in 2016. The head of the Public Safety Committee, Councilman Brandon Scott of District 2, had this to say.
One hearing, council hearing, is nowhere near enough of a public testimony to garner support for this program. This is something that if the administration and the police department wants to do, they should go around community to community with the actual data, having town halls, which the mayor could do in a way that actually honors the public.
What was the reaction of other city council members?
Other city council members had similar reactions. We saw Ryan Dorsey at one point say, "This is bonkers. How can we have the use of this plane along with city cameras?" So those cameras, the CCTV cameras, and the plane would...
It's a separate program. It's a separate decision.
It's a separate program. It's called City Watch. And this surveillance plane would go into the City Watch program, which includes the CCTV cameras. So they're taking the surveillance plane imagery from, you know, up in the air and overlaying it with City Watch cameras. So a lot of the city council members, Councilman Yitzi Schlafer, was also saying that he had been to a few of McNutt's presentations with these community groups, and he said the way that he was presenting the information to citizens was not as accurate as it could be. Also, they're concerned that persistent surveillance technology systems, or the Baltimore Community Support Program, is not a registered business in good standing with the Maryland Business Registration License books. So there's several concerns that I think the city council members were asking and bringing up at this meeting and trying to get answers for.
Who is funding Ross McNutt's work?
Right. So we have the Arnold Foundation based in Texas that's funding this work. Based on my research, the Arnold Foundation has had some very controversial funding in the past of various different research and other technologies. I went on the website for the Arnold Foundation to look up the amount in the grant funding that they were going to support McNutt, and I actually couldn't find the actual line item of that funding. So it's a private fund that's being put towards McNutt's technology in Baltimore.
Do we know what the cost of a program of aerial surveillance like this would be?
It would be about $1.63 million a year for the program. The foundation has promised, as of what McNutt is saying, the foundation has promised between 3 to 4 years of coverage that would be fully paid for, that the citizens of Baltimore would not have to pay for this. But again, we weren't unsure of how this money is getting to us, how that money would work out, especially because there's an MOU between the company
Memorandum of Understanding.
Yes, between the company and the police department.
We know that these planes flew over Baltimore for a big part of 2016. Has this aerial surveillance program been widely tested?
Yes and no. So this program was over Baltimore for a 90-day period, two 90-day periods, as we know. McNutt has also used this on the border with Mexico in the town of Juarez, Mexico. And it's a different type of program in which there are no CCTV cameras available. So they're just getting that eye-in-the-sky view of the ground. So, you know, this would be sort of McNutt's first guinea pig launch of this new technology in Baltimore. And his ultimate goal, which he did say in the hearing, is to start this off in Baltimore and maybe make it grow to other cities, for other police departments to use it in other cities.
So what's next? Is Mayor Catherine Pugh interested in bringing this tool back?
Mayor Catherine Pugh's legislative affairs people are saying, Karen Stokes is saying, that the administration is always interested in new technologies and how to reduce crime. However, we know that Mayor Pugh has not made a firm ask from Annapolis and the General Assembly this year to get any sort of surveillance plane up in the air, although she said if she had enough public interest in favor of the plane, she would consider it. But as of right now, we're not seeing any motion on her behalf. Now, if it comes down to it, it could be that the police department itself is looking for new technology like this to support them, and that would have to come through, I guess, whoever the new police commissioner will be.
The mayor has talked about the importance of working for prevention of crime. This strikes me as more of a tool to solve crimes.
Right. So we see that the mayor has put forward a lot of money towards getting rid of vacant housing, assisting with affordable housing in the city to make sure people have safe neighborhoods to live in. Those are the types of things she's working on now. And that's also a goal of the city council, that if they can put money into youth programming and youth activities, they would prefer to do that over putting money towards crime solving.
Dominic, I appreciate you walking us through it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Dominique Maria Benesi covers Baltimore City for WIPR. She covered the Public Safety Committee's public meeting last week about aerial surveillance. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad we're with you on The Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.